Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the show that's not too interesting, it's not boring, hopefully not, it's just interesting enough. Joining me today, as always, in our quarantine zones are Robin.
Hello, how are you, Alex?
I'm not too bad, Robin, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm chatting to you two with a beer in my hand. Couldn't be better.
On a Monday? Insane, Robin.
Never too late for a beer. Never too early either.
Martin, how are you today?
I think I reflect that sentiment too. It's never too early, it's never too late, because I just don't know what the time is. You know, it's don't know what the date is, don't know what the day is. Well, you just said it's Monday, so thanks for that. But yeah, overall, not too bad. Not too bad at all. How are you?
Good.
You well?
I'm pretty well. I'm very great. I'm feeling very humbled, Martin.
Oh, why? Right now. Why is that?
By the level of support that we have received on our Patreon this month.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say an extra special thank you to everyone who signed up this month. And specifically, I wanted to thank Fernando Soto, Big Baz, Michael Kakulis, who I know. Thanks, Michael. Katie Todd, Carl Kaprowski, Chloe Cockrell, Tayaba Sajid, Ayoz Ben Farid, Jarax Nida, Sean X Fury, and Jack Lee. And then the people that increased their pledges this month, Denton Peasley and Carol C. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you. No, that's incredible.
Thank you. No, really, 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 really kind of you guys. And I mean, we've got a lot more coming up, haven't we? We've got, after this episode, we're going straight over there and we're recording a little piece on Kim Jong-un and the mystery that is surrounding him at the moment, because it is bizarre, isn't it?
Where is he? He's MIA.
Exactly. Exactly. So so that should be fun. And then we've also got a Discord that we've launched fairly recently as well, haven't we?
Yeah. And we'll be doing fairly regular chats, Q&A sessions with our patrons for that. And there's a genuine ongoing discussion about all kinds of things going on. It's fascinating, actually. Really thought-provoking, seeing the conversations that are going on between our patrons. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a fun group of people. And we've even spoken to some of them on... like had a chat on the phone.
On the phone? On a digital telephone device.
Which is really cool. And I think we're definitely going to do that again. So yeah, if you did want to join the Discord, then feel free to jump on that.
Yeah. Available to all patrons of all tiers, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, Martin, what have you learned this week?
Well, I've learned this week that your pet can be allergic to you.
Oh.
Yeah. So
oh, that's cruel, isn't it?
So often we talk about my cat. I don't know if you can hear him on the microphone, but he's eating biscuits very loudly in the background. I don't think he's allergic to me, but he could be. And that's because humans can be allergic to cat hair. It can also be allergic to many other things like foods and dust or whatever. But cats can be allergic to particles of human skin. So we know that when our skin flakes, it turns into dust, which is then dispersed into the atmosphere. Well, cats can be allergic to this. So they can be allergic to humans, which is pretty mad. I mean, it's very rare. It's only in a very, very small percentage of cats. I think it's like 10% show allergies to food. And this is like a fraction of that. So we're talking like lower than 0.5% of all cats have some kind of allergy to their human counterparts. But I just thought that was really, really quite interesting, because there are so many people that are just like, I've got this allergy to the cat. I can't have a cat, or that make an excuse for not having a cat because they're allergic. Well, maybe the cat doesn't want to be with you, mate.
What poor animals. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, do you know how it expresses itself? Is it like they sneeze or they get a rash?
Yes. I think it's more like an asthma kind of thing.
Oh.
So it's a little bit difficulty breathing. Apparently asthma is more common in cats than dogs, which is interesting. I'm not quite sure why. It kind of manifests itself in that way.
I think one of my sister's French bulldogs got an allergy test, and it turned out he was pretty much allergic to everything.
Yeah, French bulldogs, they're pretty sensible, aren't they?
Yeah, most things, including humans. And I mean, they're French bulldogs, so he has trouble breathing anyway. So
that's really sad.
You know how some people are allergic to specific types of dog?
Yes, usually like long head, right?
like long-haired dogs. Do you think it's similar, like with hairy, particularly hairy people? Are cats less likely to like me because I've got a beard?
Well, I think they'd probably be less likely to like you if you had dandruff.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably the dusty, the skinny dust. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So if you're someone whose scalp is peeling like a flapjack, then ensure that you get a cat that's suitable for your flapjacky needs.
I mean, you could just wash thoroughly.
Do that as well.
That would also help.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the other reasons why it doesn't happen too often is because humans, unlike cats, well, cats do wash themselves, I guess, but we shower, we bathe, we're good in general.
Speaking of washing, I've got a water-related fact that I learned this week. Apparently, you know the River Nile?
I've heard of it.
Flows through Egypt.
One of my favourite rivers.
One of the best rivers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard. How much of it would you say is in Egypt?
Oh, I mean, you'd say quite a large portion, but now that you've asked that, I'm thinking not very much at all.
Yeah.
So if someone said, where's the River Nile? I would say it's in multiple countries, but Egypt's the one that comes to mind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would always say Egypt, and most people would expect me to say that, but apparently only 22% of the River Nile is actually in Egypt.
Okay. Interesting.
The rest of it flows all the way down to, is it Victoria Falls where it starts? Or am I wrong about that? I'm getting confused.
I would not be able to tell you, but that sounds right. Let's go with it until we're proven wrong.
Someone in the comments will correct me right now.
Definitely.
Because
that was one of the great unanswered questions, wasn't it? What's the source of the Nile?
So what did you learn this week, Alex?
Well, I learned, and this is kind of, I guess, relevant with how things in 2020 seem to be going so far, but I learned that CNN, the news organization, prepared a end of the world doomsday video to be broadcast by their last surviving employee in the event that the world was going to come to an end.
That's mad. They actually did it.
Which is pretty mad. They made it, and the video was leaked by a former intern in 2009.
Oh, no way.
And which is pretty embarrassing.
I imagine it's resurfacing now then, because people are considering that this might be a real possibility.
I think so, yeah.
yeah.
But it's just the video is... It's just footage from outside the White House on the White House lawn, I think, of a marching band playing a song, which is a hymn, a Christian hymn called Nearer My God to Thee.
God to Thee. Oh, that's what they played on the Titanic as it went down.
Exactly, oh, yeah.
How jolly.
Which is very fitting, I think. but it's quite a haunting video. Imagine if you ever saw that come on your TV, then you'll know the world is about to come to an end.
I mean, on the one hand, it's good to know that they're prepared for most eventualities, just like obituaries for celebrities written years before they die, right? And then they just update them when they actually do die, so they can quickly publish them,
you know,
in an hour or so of the news breaking. But I feel like it's a bit odd to be that, like, specifically prepared for that thing.
Also, it's like the last surviving employee is going to air that. What, in their last few moments, precious moments on this planet? Yeah. They're going to carry on doing their job.
Press that red
button. All about the ratings.
They're definitely not going to do that.
That's a really good point. This definitely strikes me as, I don't know if you guys have been in this situation, I'm sure you have, where an intern like this person that leaked it joins a company, or is that a company, and you're like, I'm too busy to set something proper for the intern. Get them working on the end of the world video. That'll keep them going for a while.
This is a first week of work kind of project.
Make the end of the world video for CNN. It's like possibly the most important video in history, but they don't think it's going to happen, so.
Yeah. I mean, it is, but also it really isn't at that point.
But if there's one person left in the whole of CNN, we're in real trouble, aren't you?
So, yeah, that's what I learned this week. I thought it was quite interesting.
That's great. Yeah, that's really interesting.
That is interesting. And I guess my weird news of the week kind of follows on from that. I mean, it goes on the theme of no one being left apart from one person at work. And this is...
okay.
Sounds odd, but hear me out. This is the story of a man who made a bomb threat to his work to avoid having to go in and having the day off.
For one very day off.
For a day off. For a day off. Yeah.
Just call in sick.
You could call in sick, can you? But
you could lie.
So this guy, Richard Hamilton, in Florida.
Oh, he was, what a dick.
Of course it was in Florida. Was arrested for making a bomb threat to his work, a construction company. And there was 20 people in his work, and they had to evacuate this water treatment facility that they were working on as a result of this particular bomb threat. So he basically just, of course, just didn't want to go into work, called in this threat, probably not necessarily understanding the severity of it, or if he did.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he just wanted the day off, basically. And so they had the police and the bomb squads came in, they had dogs, sniffer dogs, they had drones going overhead, all to find that there wasn't any evidence of a bomb at all. And so he is on a $10,000 bond. Rightly, for this particular threat.
Generous, actually.
How did they know it was him, right? Who called it in? Don't tell me he used his real name.
I imagine he used his real phone as opposed to his real name.
Yeah.
Didn't
come call on. From a payphone. That would have been true.
And he said that he made the threat because he was having a bad day and didn't want to work. So,
just go home then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Insane though. I mean, to go to those lengths just to not work for the day—that's crazy. And so,
I actually want to know now, like, did he have a big argument with his wife or something? Or did some really tragic news or the day before about a relative?
You've got to be a little bit unstable.
He just needed to vent his anger. He was like, I'm going to call him a bomb threat.
The other thing is, like, he's obviously fired. No one's going to employ him. It's just not worth the risk for one day off. If you're thinking about it on a very, very basic level, if you get caught, you're probably not working again for a long, long time. Mm.
Yeah. So why did you leave your last job? Well, I called in a bomb threat to take a day off work. It's probably not a good reason.
Yeah.
This is why America needs statutory sick pay across all the states, universally, in all businesses, right?
Well, so people can
avoid exactly this kind of scenario.
So people can skive off.
Britain, people. It doesn't happen in Britain.
No, true, it doesn't. That's a good point. Yeah. But it made me think, what's the craziest thing you guys would consider doing to have that lion on a Monday morning? You know, not at the moment because we're all quarantined anyway, but how far would you go?
I considered suicide once. defeated the object of having that lion.
Mm. Oh, dear. That shouldn't be funny because it's not a funny topic. Yeah.
No. You would technically still have a lion. Just be
a very long lion.
Very long
very
lion.
Very long lion, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, shall I move on to my news story?
Please.
Yes, please.
So this is kind of a weird... So yeah, my news story follows on from what we were talking about last week with less kind of UFO sightings around. However, there was a weird sighting in the UK this week, or last week, sorry. There was a mystery burning object which flew over UK skies, leaving a trail of smoke that stayed for 20 minutes. And there's some weird pictures of what this thing is.
I missed this completely, Alex.
Burning up in the sky. And I'm wondering what it could possibly be. It's like a weird, it's like a meteor or something, but it looks kind of too, I don't know. It stayed there for 20 minutes. What? I don't know what that could have been, and it should have been in the news more.
But then there's no answer at all, no clue to what it is.
This was in Cambridgeshire. This happened. A mysterious plume of smoke appeared over the county. It was a large flaming object.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it left a trail in the sky. Can you see it, Martin?
Yeah. That's crazy. It looks almost like a red lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Apparently it was coming down very slowly and spiraling.
Oh, yeah. It's like smoke, isn't it? Yeah. Interesting. I wonder what that could be. Because there weren't many planes. Well, most of the time, as we spoke about before, a lot of sightings of things get kind of misinterpreted as, oh, it must be an aircraft, a small aircraft, a plane, or whatever. Whereas there's not much in the sky, so this kind of thing really does stand out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Man, there's no kind of reference over how high in the sky it must have been, but if it was over the entire county, it must have been very high and covered a large portion of the sky for everyone to see it.
Could have been a satellite of some kind, or a meteor.
One of Starlink's satellites coming out of orbit?
Yep.
Probably not.
Okay, so this article, I don't know if you're going to go on to potential explanations.
No, go for it.
This one says...
Well, what is it?
It says that a cargo plane flown overhead beforehand, but quite a while beforehand, and turbulence could have caused the kind of, what they're called, the trails to cause like a spiral effect, potentially.
Oh, so it's just like, the spiral like from a plane.
Well, that's what this person says. I mean, maybe it's the kind of red glow that made him...
But that's kind of sunset.
Yeah,
so
I know, right?
That,
it doesn't quite add up.
Yeah.
But that's a potential explanation here anyway.
So it's just like a plume of smoke that is colored. It looks like it's burning in the sky because of
the night
sunset.
Sky. That's what they seem to think on this particular article, but that might
be
wrong.
I mean, it could be. Yeah, it's difficult to know without seeing a video of it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see that, wouldn't it? Rather than just the pictures.
Mm.
That's interesting. Quite a few people spotted it. It wasn't just one person who thought it was odd.
I mean, we spoke about... do you remember the Phoenix Lights in America?
Yes, yes.
And the main theory with that, or the only explanation other than it being a UFO, was that it was flares... left, like, dropped by the military and that were training.
Yeah.
So these flares drop down very slowly and they have, you know, a light on them. So maybe this could be a flare, like a military flare or something.
It could be. Perhaps.
Could be anything.
Mm. But yeah, I thought that was weird and kind of something a bit different to what we are used to hearing about these days in coronavirus world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Particularly in the UK. It's unusual to have something like that in the UK. We don't tend to get many of those things.
Yeah. I thought it was quite an interesting one.
Well, my news takes us from the UK to Canada.
Okay.
To Quebec, where the Court of Appeal has ruled in favour of... ruled in favour of a man who lost a bet on a best-of-three game of rock, paper, scissors. And the man's name is Edmund Mark Hooper, and he bet and lost $517,000.
On rock, paper, scissors?
On rock, paper, scissors.
What?
In January 2011.
What? So this guy multi-millionaire then?
I would assume so, except he had to remortgage his home. The costs.
No, then.
So probably not. But
the multi-millionaires don't tend to bet all their wealth on games.
On rock, paper, scissors. That's the other thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's mad. You get one nutter who's okay with doing that, but to get two people that are both happy to go through with that, it's just insane.
Or was it just one person just like, I bet I can win? There were no stakes for the other person.
That's the thing. Why would you bet that amount of money when you... if you know you can't afford it and you end up remortgaging your house.
Especially given it's a very specific amount of money as well. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I assume it was a... I can only imagine this was some kind of like peak of some massive betting spree with a guy one evening. And maybe a few drinks were involved. And I assume some gambling addiction as well.
In a weird way, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? Like otherwise
it's just a really... Yeah.
Completely... That's crazy. So does he have to pay, does he have to pay this then?
So this bet took place in 2011. And then the original judgment when he tried to sue the man he lost to was in 2017. And then he took it to the Court of Appeals and they have ruled now in his favour.
So this is a 9-year...
Yes, it's been nine
exercise
years.
In the legal practices of Canada.
But here's where it gets interesting, I think. Because it's to do with a quirk in the law of Quebec.
Right.
So according to the law, any contract for a bet requires the wager to be based on an activity requiring only skill or bodily exertion on the part of the parties and not dependent on chance.
Oh, so you're not allowed to. So basically, that's just saying you're not allowed to do unlicensed gambling, basically.
Essentially, yeah, it's but a way to control.
You're allowed to wager if it's on something else. Like, oh, I bet I can jump.
Something that requires skills.
I can jump higher than you.
Yeah, you have a chance of winning.
That's a weird one, though, isn't it? It's a win because they'd be happy to. You could wager $1 million on a race, a running race, but you couldn't do rock paper scissors.
Well, here's the thing: the first time he sued, they said no, rock paper scissors requires skill. But then the next time around, the judge ruled on another part of the law, which said that the size of the bet was too excessive for a game
Interesting.
Of rock, paper, scissors.
That's all relevant. I agree to an extent. You don't want this person going broke, of course, over a stupid game, rock, paper, scissors. But excessive is only relative to how much someone has, right?
Yeah. I still have questions with this whole arrangement. Like, how many times did they play the game to determine who'd won? Who was this other person that he played with? Was it a friend? Imagine, like, because he might... Did he sign something?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Did he sign a contract beforehand?
Was this a verbal agreement?
This is a good question. I mean, the name of the person he played was Michel Primo, and it doesn't say whether they were friends or not. It says it was the best of three games.
French.
I would guess they're not friends. If you're
suing them. Imagine if we played a game of rock, paper, scissors and you were like, oh, I bet you £1 million I could win. And then I was like, all right, played the game. And then we're like, right, pay up or I'll take you to court.
Yeah.
Well, that is an interesting story. Thank you, Robin. I think it leaves me with more questions than answers.
Yes. As any good story should.
But do you think it's time that we jump into our main topic of discussion for this week's podcast?
Oh, yeah.
So before we move on to the main topic of discussion this week, we wanted to find out what you guys thought of our discussion last week, and we wanted to read out some of your comments that you posted on last week's video. Do you guys have any comments that you'd like to read out?
Yeah. So
because I don't have any. Sorry.
So I got a funny one of from Damien Joseph. So at the beginning of the podcast, we had about a 5-minute conversation about eggs, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
about what your preference for eggs was. So Damien Joseph says, I thought I'd tune into an episode of Dad's Army, bartering rations of eggs. This is not the apocalypse I was expecting.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. This whole situation has kind of really made me question what would happen in an apocalypse. People, the shortages in question are pretty strange. toilet roll and eggs. I think we were talking, because it was Easter last one.
Yeah.
So we were talking about how we could get Easter eggs, but not actual eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Plentiful supply of Easter eggs.
Very true. And in a comment that was much more closely resembling or relating to the main topic of the last week's podcast, which was about why have alien sightings gone down in recent times. Globo Gibbons says UFO sightings have gone up though. And yes, at the beginning of 2020, UFO sightings have seemingly gone up. But the trend over time has been downwards. And I think that's what we were discussing last week overall. But it's an interesting point, and something that we didn't mention too much was that in the first few months of this year, especially since like February, March time, UFO sightings have had a spike. I think because people are at home, people are quarantined, so they're out looking up at the sky more. They have more time to do those kind of things. And also there's been the whole Elon Musk's satellites have been very much in the news, especially in the UK, have been going overhead. So maybe people are looking up to the skies and maybe even misinterpreting what those are as well.
Yes, or, there's been a Martin, have you ever considered that maybe it's because they're back?
They are back
from outer space, yes.
Also, since the lockdown began, pollution has reduced. The skies might arguably be clearer.
That's a good point.
And we're more able to see the stuff
more easily. Yeah,
that's a very good point. But yeah, I just thought I'd add that in because you are right. You are right, Globo. Well done. Sweet.
We did also question in the discussion whether they had actually gone down or if just the ways that people reported them had changed.
Exactly.
So people weren't reporting them as much to this company or organization, but they were posting them on social media instead. But we must move on to this week's topic of discussion. And it was brought up to us that One idea for what we could discuss could be to revisit a video that we'd previously done years ago and see how our opinions on it had changed. So what we wanted to talk about this week, in light of everything going on in the US at the moment, is will America have a second civil war? What do you guys think?
Big topic.
big topic.
Hot topic. I think the starting place is to kind of go over what the key points of when we last spoke about this or when we made the video, what those key points were for us to think that there could be a second civil war. And I think the main was looking back at the video.
Does anyone remember?
Well, a lot of it was Trump versus Clinton, especially, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In the build up to the 2016 election, especially when we first looked into this topic and about those kind of growing tensions between Democrats and Republicans. And I mean, do you guys think that those fractures have gotten any better? Have they gotten worse, or they kind of stayed the same? Because I think that was kind of the main talking point and sticking point, was the fact that we're definitely living in a world now, or America is living in a society that's very fractured along those political lines.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that they're any more healed or united than they were when we made that video. I think the trend has carried on. Trump hasn't changed his leadership style. He's gone further down the side of appealing to his base supporters, who are more supporting him now than ever, I think.
I think Trump's actually... It's worthwhile putting the spotlight on Trump in this scenario, because any political leader in any Western democracy typically does pander to the other side to a certain extent. When they have outright majorities in government, in the case of America, it's the Congress, they go ahead, plow ahead with their legislation plans, with their agenda and whatever their platform was when they were elected. They tend to plow ahead with that, but there's always some give and take. There's always some accommodation of the opposite side because they want to get those votes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and they want to get those approval points in the ratings. And obviously, we know Trump cares about ratings, but Trump's entire attitude throughout his presidency has been an expectation of love and an expectation of approval and of cooperation from the other side. He's never, ever tried once to reach out to the other side and to do something that they want and to moderate his own policies and his own attitude in order to gain their favor in any way.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that part of that is because he thinks that if I've got such a dedicated hardcore audience or hardcore following, I simply don't need that, and two, where the Democrats, some people will be split between two or three candidates, if I make myself as the only Republican candidate, which is pretty much what he's done quite successfully, there doesn't seem to be any alternative to him.
No.
That people will go out and vote in their droves, not necessarily because they love Trump, but because they're anti the opposition. And that's what he's based his whole campaign on, has been anti-Democrat as opposed to pro-Trump in a weird way.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, he is appealing to people's fear, I guess. Mm. So it's always about, I mean, his stance in 2016 was build the wall. And it's very much now seems to be the Democrats are taking away our freedoms and they're trying to ruin the economy before the election happens is the current thing I'm seeing.
Yeah, like there's been a dramatic shift this week, in fact, towards specifically immigrants again.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he's introduced this ban on immigrants. Yeah. I think it's actually just a ban on green card applications, if I'm correct. I might be wrong there.
And there was something actually, it was people's stimulus checks that if they're married to someone who's not a US citizen, or I think they might be delayed or something like that.
Yeah, just pointless little things that have probably come from Stephen Miller. But the point is that Trump's platform seems to have shifted specifically onto foreigners now, which follows on quite comfortably from his attempt to characterize COVID-19 as the Chinese virus
earlier
on, which got wisely criticized and shot down by the media. And to be honest, I'm kind of surprised he shifted away from describing it as the Chinese virus, I guess because it's too easily disprovable. I don't know. I think there have been a few commentators this week who've said, political specialists who's saying that, and analysts who are saying that everything Trump's doing in the last couple of weeks indicates that in the 2020 election, he's going to run on an anti-immigration platform again.
Well, if it worked the first time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. I think with COVID as well, since the whole China virus was shut down, so much of his rhetoric is based on an opposition, an enemy. Because there isn't a physical enemy in COVID-19, I think that's one of the reasons he's struggled to get his point across and to build support, because it's very much anti-Democrat, anti-immigration, anti-whatever. Mm. But everyone's anti-COVID. Everyone's anti-COVID-19. Yeah. So he's had to shift away from that and go, actually, and this is another point, but now I'm anti the governors who are causing us all to lock down when actually we should reopen the economy. Bad governors. Mm. Bad, yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's your opposition again. There's a place that we can go and protest. Mm. We can be against the people who are trying to limit our freedoms of the right to work, you know, and being able to make a living for ourselves. And I think that's something that I imagine himself, he probably doesn't really care whether in certain aspects, whether the economy is open or not. He just cares about whether people are supporting him through it all.
And I think as well, like, people might think that this is, you know, an insane topic, like, will America have another civil war? But then you've got the president making tweets like, liberate Michigan, liberate Virginia. And he's using this kind of terminology. And you can't ignore what he says, even though that is usually the advice given by some of his handlers, especially with this disinfectant.
Yeah, but disinfectant. This is why we chose to discuss this topic, isn't it? Because we made this video about it years ago for completely different reasons. But that whole liberate Michigan or whatever series of tweets has been picked up online by social media groups who are specifically created to foster a support for a second civil war. Something that started out on 4chan a while ago, probably as a joke, but a code term for the Second Civil War, Boogaloo.
Boogaloo.
As in Electric Boogaloo, the sequel to...
Oh, right.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
That classic meme. So
Civil War 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, so it started on 4chan, possibly as a joke. To use the word Boogaloo as a code word for a second US Civil War. But then it's been picked up and it's been trending and it's using as a hashtag and as a kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a call sign almost for these protesters and these groups, these pro-gun right groups and these far right groups who are kicking up a fuss at the height of the COVID-19 crisis and the lockdown in America. They're using this to drum up support and to organize events. But this code word specifically is connected to a second civil war. And I think they even term themselves Bujihadists.
Wow.
So obviously the implication there being that it's a holy cause for them. It's a serious... and kind of also jihad has that uncomfortable association with terrorism and underground rising up against the authority and the government connotations. And there's an article on, I think it was Vice. Yeah, Vice published it just last week, 24th of April, about a study by scientists at Carnegie Mellon School of Computer Science Institute for Software Research, who've been analyzing social media posts on things like Twitter and Facebook and other platforms, and they found that 45.5% of users tweeting about the coronavirus have the characteristics of bots.
Wow, that's worrying, isn't it?
Yeah, Yeah, the two most significant characteristics are they're tweeting more frequently than humanly possible, or they're in multiple countries within several hours of posts being made, which, given that most air travel is limited, it's kind of unlikely that a human being is crossing borders that much.
Yeah, I mean, you can change your IP, can't you, quite easily?
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
But still, yeah.
Well, that's why they think it's probably bots, because...
The one that gets me is when someone's just created a new account and then they're posting like really, really extreme vitriol. It's like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Do you ever see those people that put in their taglines or their descriptions, not a bot? It's like, okay, assuming you're not a bot, do you ever wonder why you have the exact same opinions and thoughts so that you can be misconstrued as a state-sanctioned bot?
You should
disinformation campaign.
You should not have to say that you're not
why
a bot.
Why do you have the same opinions potentially as a rogue disinformation campaign sanctioned by a foreign government?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm glad you mentioned disinformation there, because just to make it clear what we're talking about here and the significance of this bot statistic is that these bots are associated with 125 false narratives online regarding coronavirus.
Yeah.
Around half of which are related to fake cures, the rest of which are related to conspiracy theories.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So there's a certain amount of opportunism, profiteering, cynical exploitation of people's fears to make money that's going on here. But it means that potentially half of the bot activity related to coronavirus at this instance in time is possibly related to state-sanctioned misinformation and disinformation campaigns, which could be stoking these far-right groups who are explicitly expressing an interest in a second civil war.
It's a scary thought.
It is. I think you can broaden that out to just all media in general. Like in America, I know that there's the far right tend to watch Fox News, the left, I guess, CNN.
Before switching to Fox News and getting angry.
Sure. But do you think is America as divided as it seems to be on the surface level? Or do you think it actually is now divided to the point where people are going to start seriously considering the prospect of a civil war? Because it feels like they're far too comfortable for that to happen.
I think when you look at a lot of the time, we're in a bit of a bubble, whether it be good or bad, where you on social media, especially, people share stuff which is at the extremes of the spectrum. Whether you're, say, if you're someone who leans further to the left and you have other people sharing things by someone who's on the right side of the spectrum to show just how crazy the right are, right? And vice versa. Yeah, people sharing someone from a particular movement who say, like, some of the Antifa stuff, and they're like, look, this is what people on the left are. And they're misconstruing individuals with political ideologies, or at least like what a kind of stereotype of that political ideology is. I think when you take a step back and you take yourself offline and you actually speak to people, people may have these underlying feelings, whether they're left-leaning or right-leaning, but it never seems to be quite as extreme as the kind of stuff you see and hear online that gets repeated and retweeted, because people are only going to show the sensationalist stuff. So maybe it seems a little bit worse than it actually is.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think it's always worse online. I think Americans have more in common with each other than they might think. Maybe I'm naively optimistic about that. But I don't think they're as divided as they seem, but I think the media and bots definitely have a role in it. And I think the president himself is creating this environment where people feel more divided than ever before. I don't know about you guys, but I think that's kind of seems to be the case. I think it does. The buck stops with the president, who, like we said earlier, doesn't seem to be making any attempts to work with the other side. And I don't think it's just the president, but the Republicans in general.
I think Mitch McConnell is probably the worst for this.
Yeah, just like not working with the Democrats on anything.
Yeah, taking pride. Like he said, his proudest moment in his political career was saying no to Barack Obama's choice for the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely throwing the American system out the window for the sake of political point scoring.
Mm. And basically, this is basically trolling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst kind, because he was successful and he's influenced and transformed a generation of lawmaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. Do you think that the impeachment has had a major role in amping this up as well? Because it almost divided the stools between those who were behind the president, no matter what, and those very much on the other side. It's like, I think that's definite taking it to a new level in terms of the division between right and left.
I guess so. It was definitely along party lines, with the exception of Mitt Romney, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
It's an uncomfortable moment for the Republicans, because the impeachment was the first opportunity they were given to starkly and clearly state their position on Donald Trump, wasn't it? Because up to that point, whenever they voted in favor of Donald Trump, in agreement with Donald Trump, it was always just like, oh, well, I agree with the policy. I don't agree with Trump, but I agree with the policy. Or I agree with this aspect of this law that we're passing in. Or I disapprove of what the Democrats are doing to this particular law. They always had that get-out clause before.
Mm-hmm.
So they could support Trump and keep the support of Trump voters without saying, I'm with Trump.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But with the impeachment, it was all about Trump. It was all about whether or not you stood by Trump, regardless of the flagrantly illegal things he was doing.
Yeah.
And that really exposed, as you implied, Martin, I think it exposed both sides, didn't it? Because by standing so clearly against Trump, the Democrats kind of closed the door to any cooperation with him.
Yeah, that's true. It's a new line in the sand for sure. I mean, the thing against there being one of the things that I think is the most that suggests that we aren't entering a Second World War is the fact that
World War.
I do apologise. Second Civil War is the geographical factors involved in especially the First Civil War, the fact that it was done very much on state lines. Now, I know nowadays you still have red states, you still have blue states, and people vote along those lines, but you have people who are massive Trump supporters who are working out in California, working in New York City, and vice versa. People are more spread about, right? The US is much more diverse than it has been in a while, despite there being such segregation within states.
That's true.
How would it kind of be orchestrated?
You exactly. If we're going on a ground war, it's not so... The dividing lines are much more blurred than they have been in the past, just geographically.
Yeah, I do think anything militarily, if that was to happen, when you get into the specifics of it, that's when it kind of breaks down, I think.
But how would it manifest itself in reality?
Yeah, especially when you compare it to the First Civil War as well. So like in the First Civil War, the US Army numbered only 16,000 and were spread out all across the frontier. And this kind of allowed this kind of civil unrest to happen within the Confederate States.
Mm.
Whereas how would that happen today without the massive standing US Army just putting down any current civil unrest? If it was to start springing up.
I mean, you've got the National Guard, but
they
got to take on the US Army.
Yeah.
And the US Army, I feel like the US Army is pretty unified. I mean, they're technically apolitical, but we always know that they lean towards the Republicans. But even they would be like, the US Army would have to split in order for a civil war to really be effectively fought, right?
Yeah, sure.
And the army's not going to split unless I'm missing something.
It does make you think, are we kind of entering a second civil Cold War or a cold civil war where the methods and the reasons for conflict are very, very different? Like people are using using social media as one example, with so much kind of debate about whether the US and Trump have been colluding with Russia. I mean, these are these are things that are very much Cold War-esque in terms of the methods used, as opposed to it being an out-and-out conflict, the physical conflict. It's more about, okay, we're fighting on different battle lines for who controls power, as opposed to military might.
Well, it's more like a culture war, isn't it? Like back, like the 60s, the horrific conflict and the violence, the assassinations that took place, the people that were killed in confrontations during the 60s with the civil rights protests, and then, of course, with the Vietnam War protests. And probably my naive British perspective is that Watergate brought that culture war to an end. And the losing side was the Republican side. It was obviously the Civil Rights Act was successfully passed, mainly thanks to JFK's death and people saying, well, we've got to give him a legacy now. And then even obviously huge, huge success and pressure applied by Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement. That's not understate their influence there. But JFK's death was a huge motivating factor in Congress to get the Civil Rights Act passed. Mm-hmm. And then you had the Vietnam War, which was essentially lost. And then you had Watergate, which kind of cast the demons in stark light. And everyone said, right, well, you're the guys who are saying we should be going to war. You're the guys who oppose the Civil Rights Act. You're the guys who are opposing the sexual revolution. You're clearly the bad guys.
It's interesting to know how far that reached beyond Nixon. Like he was vilified massively, right? And rightly so.
Yeah.
But also did it have a negative effect upon that whole generation of politician or politicos? I don't know.
But yeah, also with that analysis, Robin, you kind of say that there was this kind of understanding after a while, like people woke up and saw that, you know, oh, okay, they were the bad guys. But I think we've got a new kind of problem that's emerging, which is like an information warfare, which is being used over what is truth. I mean, we've got Trump on video last week saying, is it a good idea to inject yourself with disinfectant? And then like the next day, people saying, oh, he was referencing some obscure thing that happened in the 1950s. Oh, no, he was just being sarcastic. Oh, he was calling out the fake news media. And then he said that, yeah, he was just being sarcastic. It's just this kind of...
Any of the above.
How can, you know, it's the line from 1984 where it's the party urged you to ignore everything that you were seeing with your eyes and ears.
To me, it's not so much about straight out now disinformation. You can disprove that. It's about when something is backed up by half-truths and marginal falsity. So it's like, yes, what you're saying is true, but in the context you're saying it, it doesn't make any sense. But people only want to read one layer deep, right? They don't want to go into the reasons behind what's been said, even though what you've said is based on maybe a statistic or a fact. That statistic is embedded in a whole load of other contexts that you're completely missing.
So bringing it back to the topic at hand, has your opinions on this changed since the last time we spoke about this? I think we came to the conclusion in the last time that it was unlikely to happen. How do you feel about it 2 years on?
I think we may well be in a civil war. I think it may well already exist. It's just being fought on completely different battle lines to before. It's fought on the battle lines, as we've mentioned, of information and of truth and right versus left, of Trump versus Biden, as it will be, as opposed to based on, I don't know, the first Civil War being based on the abolition of slavery primarily as a key factor. So I think we may well be in one, although it may well be just a cold second Civil War as opposed to one that will end up being a full-on conflict.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Martin. And everything you said, Alex, about the way information has changed. I'm inclined to agree with that. I think still think an actual war is unlikely. I think it's even more unlikely now because you've had the impeachment, you've had the midterms, you've got the general election, presidential election coming up. So America is having these opportunities to express its frustrations. The people who are most frustrated might still be losing, but as time goes by, their frustration ebbs away, which makes it even more unlikely that the physical act of war is going to happen, especially since the people who are most likely to turn to violence, let's be honest, are the ones who are currently winning, even though they say they're losing.
I mean, so, they're the ones who love guns. So.
Yeah, exactly. So they're the ones who are keeping this war going and this narrative of a potential war going. And like Martin said, I think it's because now that everything you said is possibly true. It's because they're fighting a different kind of war now. It's about perception. It's about controlling what people think.
I think I'm in full agreement with you guys. Yeah.
Oh, that's a first. We're all in agreement. What?
Yeah, weird.
So there you go. That's our hot take. America, you are currently in a civil war. Anyone fancy a quiz?
Yes, please.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
So welcome, gentlemen, to this week's quiz. It's the usual. There's some general knowledge. But first, buzzers. Let's hear your buzzers. Martin, what have you got?
I've got an Irish schoolboy saying about frostbite.
Not much of a choice in the matter, but sure.
There's a cold journey to school this morning.
Oh, God, you wouldn't be long getting frostbite. And these new shoes that I bought as well.
It's just carrying on.
Frostbite. Okay, Robin, what's your buzzer?
Mine's a classic British sitcom.
You and he were buddies, weren't you?
Nice.
Yeah.
Dark Place. I had that last week.
You did.
Or the week before last.
You did. It's just too good. I had to go for it.
It is good.
Fair enough.
You and he were buddies.
Weren't you?
You and he were buddies, weren't you? Okay. Question one. Robin, everything to play for this week?
No, this is the decline of Robin. This is
after your loss of last week.
The rise and fall of the Robin Empire.
Okay. Question one. Mm-hmm. Can you both list the four U.S. states beginning with the letter I? That was... I think I heard Robin's first, but to be honest, I don't know if your buzzer cut out there, Martin.
That's all right. Go for it, Robin.
Thank you very kindly. The ones that I can remember... You said four? Yeah.
There are four.
Iowa?
Yep.
Idaho?
Yep. See, you've done the same thing I did last week, where you say part of it. So now, Martin, if you know the others, you can swoop in and get it.
Indiana.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Indianapolis.
No, I'm afraid not.
Our city.
Yeah.
There's one more you're both missing.
Oh.
You and
he were buddies, weren't you? Illinois.
Robin.
It is Illinois. Yeah.
Phew.
Oh, gosh.
1 point to Robin. Question two.
Okay.
Which animal's name comes first in the dictionary? I swear there were buzzers playing before the end of that question. I don't know. Martin, let's go for you.
Okay. Aardvark.
It is aardvark. Nicely done. I'm sorry if you feel cheated there, Robin. I
don't. No, I don't. It's a Blackadder. How can you not remember Blackadder?
And it's the dictionary.
Yes, that helps.
How can you not remember the whole dictionary?
Question three. Swan's a bit of a thinker.
Ooh.
Okay.
In which team game do you try to move backwards all the time?
I've got it.
I think that was Martin.
Yeah.
Rowing.
It is not rowing.
Ooh.
Although I guess that kind of works as well.
Yeah, you do.
It does, yeah.
But that's not what I'm after.
I was going to go with curling.
It's not curling either.
No.
Do you move backwards in curling?
No, not really.
Well, kind of sideways.
Kind of, you move sideways.
Yeah, the people who brush the
Yeah, they're kind of moving backwards.
Yeah.
They're kind of moving backwards.
Yeah, I feel
not
like this
curling.
Is, maybe I'm thinking too literally for this.
Move backwards.
Yeah.
Mm. It's very literal.
Oh.
New shocks that I got as well. You see, I had to turn the head.
Hello?
Go on then, Martin.
Yeah. This is Tug of War.
It's the Tug of War. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Good one. Good question.
Question four. The Battle of Bunker Hill was fought during which war?
You shocks that I got as well.
So that was close. I think you just got the first, Robin.
Yeah.
Okay, that was the American War of Independence, or the Revolutionary War.
Oh, perfect, perfect. You even gave me two options. Lovely.
Very good.
It was the American War of Independence, yes.
Yeah.
So that is, what, two all now, I believe?
Ooh, it's tight.
As we go on to question five.
Toyed like a tiger.
Okay. Question five. By the number of films produced each year and number of tickets sold, which country has the largest film industry? Oh, I think that was Martin.
Go for it.
I'm sorry if that was wrong.
China.
It's not China.
China.
Oh.
I would go for India.
It is India, yes.
Nice, yeah.
Because China has a limit on the number of films that can be produced.
Yeah, I was just thinking of...
Yeah, Martin, you idiot.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking of... what was that movie that did really well that did crap everywhere else a few years back? Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Warcraft, just made me think of Warcraft.
Yeah, China's the new huge market. All the movies are going for it.
Mm.
Like extra scenes in Iron Man 3 and X-Men Days of Future Past to feature Chinese actors so they could do better business over there.
But if it interests you guys, just to see the scale of this, in India, roughly 3.5 billion tickets, movie tickets, are sold annually, compared with Hollywood's 2.6 billion.
Wow. So, yeah. Well done.
There you go.
That's
great. Okay. Question six. Which river rises in the Himalayas in India and drains into the Bay of Bengal?
The Ganges.
It is the Ganges. I didn't hear a buzzer, but...
Oh, I did. I did.
Oh, okay.
I think I'm just going to have to start saying frostbit.
Okay.
Frostbit.
Is that okay with you, Robin?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
It is the Ganges, yes. Correct. So that is three each as we move on to question seven. I believe that's three all.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. So the next few questions are going to be a quotes round.
Ooh.
So I'm going to say a quote, and you have to tell me who said it.
Okay.
Ooh.
This could be tough.
Okay, first quote. You must be the change you wish to see in the world.
Is that Frostbit?
Martin.
Is that... Oh, no, actually, no. No, I was going to say something stupid.
Are you forfeiting your guess now?
I was thinking it was a Michael Jackson lyric.
It might have been in one of his songs, but it's not a quote from him.
Okay, I was thinking of. I don't think you'd bring Michael Jackson into this quiz.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Sounds far too inspirational.
The only thing is, I've heard this. I know this quote.
Yes.
I just can't think of who said it.
You'll kick yourselves.
Yeah,
probably. You might not.
Martin Luther King.
It was not Martin Luther King.
There you go.
Can you say the quote one more time?
You must be the change you wish to see in the world.
Frostbit.
Go on.
Could it be JFK?
It's not JFK.
Damn.
Robin.
Is it Gandhi?
It's Gandhi.
It's Gandhi, yes.
Yeah.
I didn't intend for like three questions to be related to India, but there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
there we go.
So that's 4-3 to Robin. Question eight.
Don't feel
another
like
quote.
Right.
Okay.
Well-behaved women rarely make history.
Frostbit.
Go on then, Martin.
Could that be Richard Nixon?
It's not Richard Nixon.
He loved
to be out, didn't he?
That's the best answer. I don't know the answer, but I'm going to guess Emmeline Pankhurst.
It was not, no.
No.
Two sides of the same coin, I'm sure.
I'll give you a clue. This isn't a former president like Richard Nixon. However, she did have a relationship with one.
Prosper.
Martin.
Margaret Thatcher.
It's not Margaret Thatcher, no.
Could it have been Marilyn Monroe?
It was Marilyn Monroe, yes.
Oh, right, that kind of relationship, I see, yes.
Yeah. Well done. This is harder than I thought it was going to be.
It's tough. It's tough. Yeah. A lot of these quotes, though, I've heard them, but it's just attributing it. It's tough.
Yeah, the Gandhi one was tricky. I definitely heard that one. I hadn't heard the Marilyn Monroe one before. That's a good line. So we're going to need a tiebreaker.
Need a tiebreaker. Okay. Who is said to have founded Rome after killing his brother?
Oh, my God.
Robin.
Romulus?
It was Romulus, yeah.
Killed Remus. Damn it.
Bloody killed him.
Bloody killed him, didn't he?
Well, I tried my best, Martin, to let you win.
That's all right. I mean, yeah.
Got lucky. No, thank you. Yeah.
No, I don't think you did. You knew more of the bullshit art ones, so it's fine.
Well, I didn't remember the names, though, did I? Cool. Well, thank you, Alex. Thank you for a great discussion, as always. Mm-hmm. And a great quiz.
Very good. Thanks for this discussion, guys. And as always, if you would like some more, we're going to be talking about North Korea over on our Patreon feed.
Oh, yes, we are. Check it out. Link's in the description. So go ahead and check it out. And we'll see you over there.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah, stay safe.
Bye.
Bye.